echoes of the Sunshine State, where Dat Dat is his home, lives a man named David Wright, who pens The Great Unknown. Diet Coke runs through his veins, a decoy wallet keeps him rich. Paranoia fuels his pen, and creativity's his niche.
In this episode of Write, Publish, Repeat, Sean shares his recent experience at Author Nation in the hellhole known as Las Vegas. He discusses the event's highlights, speaker insights, and the evolution of the indie publishing industry. And of course, manages to stray off topic for some serious discussions about AI's impact on publishing, direct sales, and the importance of mystery boxes in storytelling.
Write, publish, repeat. It echoes through the air. A chorus for creators. A call to those who dare. With cookies as his compass and a pen that won't retreat, he journeys through the pages. Write, publish, repeat.
Hello, and welcome to Write, Publish, Repeat, the podcast I still want to call Four Other Podcasts. We are here today with a writer that I think he's done a few books. Sean Platt is the name?
That is the name.
All right. Good to have you back, Sean.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I understand that you haven't been getting in your sleep or bubble baths lately.
That's actually a true statement.
Your aura ring says you're almost dead.
No, my aura ring is adequate. I like to live it between strong and excellent.
Wow. Okay. Adequate is just like my normal day. I'm below adequate.
I forget what's below adequate, but it's Dave. Basically danger. Yeah, Dave. It's danger.
Danger.
It's so hard. You like climb up incrementally and then a couple of bad days sleep and you're just... Yeah, I traveled last week to Vegas, which is a hellhole.
Vegas is a hellhole. You heard it here first.
Vegas is a hellhole.
Is it worse than New York, the piss hole?
Dave, I actually want you to come with me to Author Nation next year.
You're going to have to tie me up.
Well, I mean, we do that when we're together anyway. But yeah, well, I would really like, I would just want to see your expression as you walk down the strip and people are like throwing like cards at you, and it's the most obnoxious place. Maybe not in the
I'd be
world,
like, motherfucker, back off.
Dude, is that a real knife?
Yeah.
Are you packing?
One of many.
Oh, wow. How many knives do you carry at any given time?
Oh, I got the knife I'll tell you about, then a couple of decoys that I won't tell you about. You never know when you're going to need a knife.
Have you ever in your life said, that's not a knife, this is a knife?
No, I'm not that fucking cliche.
Are you surprised that they have not yet remade Crocodile Dundee?
I thought they did.
They did?
No, I thought, or maybe, I don't know, maybe it was a fever dream I had.
It just seems like something they would have remade.
He was naked and all oiled up in my remake. Oh, maybe man. That's something else.
That might be.
That's not a dick.
So, yes, my sleep has been pretty terrible. I got a good night's sleep last night, and I'm rebounding. But really looking forward to the weekend.
So you were in Vegas for Author Nation, which is a pretty big deal. How many people were there? Like, it was like a week long, right?
Well, yes and no. So it was big. I think smaller than last year. This is my first year going to Vegas for the event, which is now kind of a new event. So it was originally the 20 books to 50K event, mm-hmm. and now it's Author Nation. So it's transitioned, and I think they were down a few hundred attendees, but it was still a very big conference. I think, I'm guessing, but educated guess was like 1,200 people, and really intelligently put together with a lot of different tracks kind of based on where you are. So if you're a brand new author and you haven't published anything, there's material for you. And if you published 150 books and you're like, oh my God, how do I monetize my backlist? There were tracks for you. And I thought that was really cool. You know, all in all, a much better job than we did with our event many years ago.
And you were a speaker. That's a
and
given.
I don't just mean in the lack of dick jokes. I mean, just
no dick joke. Okay.
The maturity of the industry, you know, the industry has really grown up a lot since we started.
Yeah. You're expected to like not get canceled immediately by saying dick jokes on stage for one.
It's true.
You were a speaker there. what did you talk about? And how long did you talk? Did you talk like the whole like week?
No.
Like just, you got on and it was a battle of attrition as people just like.
I could have done that. Yeah. So you asked if
it was like one of those radio contests where like all the people have their hand on the car and the last one, you know, yeah.
I could do that. I have enough staying power to be the last one to leave. So the first day was like an exhibitor day, which was really cool. So
exhibition day?
Yes. Yeah. So like you have like Damon Courtney from Book Funnel, right? His whole team was there.
Did he have shoes?
I didn't look, but I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes, he
Thank
wore
God.
Shoes. So, you know, tools that we all use, like Pro Writing Aid, Lulu. There was a really cool company that was, you know, trying to do some interesting thing with audiobooks called Spoken. But you could ask about their tools. And that was on Monday. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday were, you know, all the events with speaking. And then they were trying something new on over the weekend. And it's called Rave. And that was more geared toward...
like ecstasy and shit?
No, there was no ecstasy.
I've been to one rave.
It was for readers instead of writers, for authors to bond with their readers. And the bridge was Kevin Smith, who gave a talk on Thursday night. And I left Friday morning first thing, and I spent a few days with my mom. But when we get Johnny back on the show to talk about being an artisan author, which is what his talk at Author Nation was about, he stayed for Rave, and he had a successful time. He brought a bunch of books in. He had this big army bag filled with 50 pounds of books, and he set up a whole display and apparently had a great day on Friday selling books. So that'll be fun to talk about. My actual talk was about collaboration and just about, you know, the last 15 years of collaborations, good collaborations, bad collaborations, great collaborations, how to be a great collaborator, and the multiplying effect of collaboration.
Were there any jokes at my expense?
Yes. Yes, there were.
Good, good. I'm glad that I was there in some form.
Yes. It's harder to talk shit about you when you're not in the room, just to be clear. Like when you're here.
You just look like an asshole.
Yeah, right. When you're here.
It's wow, I really want to work with that guy.
Right. If I'm just like talking shit and you're not there to defend yourself, not cool. So
they don't realize I don't mind.
Yeah, the only one
I welcome it.
The only joke I think I did tell was the one that you already saw because it was in the deck. And I think you actually suggested it, where it's like, we have this person and this person and this person and Dave.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah. So the only joke I told you actually wrote.
And did you have the image of me?
I did. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good. Did it get a laugh?
Yes. Yes, it did.
Okay, good. Then my job is done.
Good job.
I contributed. You're welcome, world. All right. So tell us about the speakers that were there.
My favorite speaker, I'm going to say by far, Johnny, I love you. Johnny, you were great. Joanna was great. I'll talk about Joanna in a moment also.
So you're saying this person was better than Johnny and Joanna, and they all suck in comparison. Okay, go ahead.
Well, that's not exactly what I'm saying, but I am saying
it's exactly what you're saying.
One of the best speakers I've ever seen, actually. His name was Andrew Davis, and there were a lot of things that made it great. He was just a great speaker. Like, he is a professional speaker, and he brought a professionalism that, I mean, no disrespect to the author community at all, but that's just not the kind of speaker that you typically expect to see at an event like that. I mean, he is an author, but he's a speaker before he's an author, I think. I don't know much about him, but he brought so much poise. And so it was the quality of his talk, but it was also the subject matter. He talked about mystery boxes, and you know how much I love a good mystery box. And, you know, it's even a company joke, right? Like, take a shot when Sean opens a mystery box. So for those of you who don't know what mystery box storytelling is, Andrew didn't talk about this, but the first time I heard the phrase mystery box storytelling
was when you came to my house, you saw the trunk in the middle of the living room with the blood stains on it, and you wanted to ask what it was. You couldn't. You finally worked up the courage, and I couldn't tell you, and it's still a mystery.
I'm still guessing. You're still making me wait for the answer, which is what
it's going to be a long wait. What's in the box?
I think this was 2008, I'm going to say.
Isn't that the original mystery box 7?
Mystery box. That was, it may not be the original. It's the best. It's still the best mystery box ever. So this was, I think it was 2008, 2009. J.J. Abrams had a TED talk about, you know, when he was young, he went to this magic shop and he bought this mystery box. He didn't know what was inside. And to this day, he still never opened it. He brought it out on stage and he said, that's how he tells stories. And for those of you who've seen Lost or Fringe or any of his other shows, he's very good at selling the mystery box. He's not really good at delivering what's in the mystery box at the end. That's, if JJ was as good at showing us what's in the box as teasing what's in the box, he would be one of the best ever. Stephen King has the same problem.
I feel like his box, you know, to really make this a story, JJ Abrams' mystery box that he got when he was young should have like some magical thing that if he'd only opened it years earlier, the world would have been saved, but now it's doomed.
Now it's
thanks,
doomed.
JJ.
Yeah. So, Andrew was talking all about how effective mystery boxes are in for audience building and for audience retention. And it was just a great talk with a lot of really great examples, but he actually brought out a mystery box and kept us guessing on what was going to be in it for the entire talk. He kept coming back to it and teasing it. And he showed us.
Was it Gwyneth Paltrow's head?
It was not Gwyneth Paltrow's head. It was actually for a writer in the audience, and it had writer things like coffee and coffee mugs. And
that's the lamest box ever.
But he showed, you know, how anticipation can be built and how curiosity is such a massive driver. And if you answer, you know, if you answer a reader or an audience member's curiosity prematurely, then you have a really good chance of losing them. But if you delay gratification, then you can really keep somebody on the edge of their seat.
I think
seat.
They call that edging.
But perfect. But the problem is if you don't really deliver on it, and he did talk about the math, the chasm between how much hype you build and what you have to deliver. And it was just a really super talk. I really enjoyed his energy. I really enjoyed the message. And it reminded me, you know, every email sequence that we've ever successfully written had good mystery boxes in it. Every single serial like was built on mystery boxes. You know, when we started Yesterday's Gone, that wasn't just a mystery box for our readers. That was a mystery box for me. And, you know, like, I'm passing you chapters that are full of mystery boxes that I don't even know what's inside of them. And you're doing the same to me. And so there was.
And now we have to do fucking outlines and stuff. So
yes.
The fun is gone.
It is harder. That is why I'm excited about the serialized thing that we've been talking about for that reason, because I do love mystery box storytelling, and it is a little more ready, fire, aim, which is naturally how I'm wired, even though, you know, quality commercial fiction on a production schedule often requires outlines.
Yeah, I love mystery and stories. I feel like every book I've ever loved, truly loved, every show I've ever loved, and movie to a smaller extent, because it's harder to have that in a movie and have it like really resonate, with the exception of maybe Seven. But when there's mystery there, like, what's going on in this world, or what is this person's real intentions? When there's something you don't know and you're not going to know it for a while, I just love that feeling. I love the wondering and building up my own theories, and it's just the best thing. And I feel like to what you're saying, when you tell that too early, I lose interest in the book, the movie.
Dude, you said that since we met. I repeat myself a lot. I asked you one time why you didn't read more fiction, and that was the answer you gave me, is that there's not enough mystery to keep me involved. I don't have something that is compelling me forward because I'm not curious enough. And that's a really good lesson too. If, you know, if for you as a storyteller, if you're not engaged with that much stuff, like, what could you do to engage yourself? And so, his talk was great. I really also did enjoy Joanna. I imagine anybody listening to this knows who Joanna is. And we all know how bullish she's always been about the future. She's a futurist, even if she's, you know, a few years ahead of schedule usually. The future is finally catching up to Joanna. And that was one of the biggest surprises, I think, of the conference for me, was that I was expecting a little more agita around AI. Because there just has been ever since it you know, started bubbling up a couple of years ago. But it seems like whether it's for editing or ideating or cover design or whatever, in some way, shape, or form, it's clear that this is a part of the creative, you know, process at large going forward. And I really loved Joanna's take on it, because there are two camps here. There is the more artisan AI approach that Joanna is championing. And then there's another approach that's like, oh, we can make X number of books per day. And to me,
yeah, that's what I think most people think of when they're negatively, you know, oh, people are using AI to make books. Oh, that's got to be great.
Well, then it's just a widget. Then you're just making a widget. Yeah. And I actually, and
there's, like, you're not adding anything to it, really. I mean, if you're just pushing a button and making it happen.
Well, I also don't understand how, like, you can't bond with the characters. You can't, like, how much of yourself is in that product? I feel like,
to be fair, though, anybody that's using AI to completely write their book, they probably don't have much of their self to put into it because they are lacking as a human.
Wow.
Just, you know, my take.
Strong opinion.
I just fucking with you, man.
So I feel like...
I do kind of feel that way. Like, most of the people are probably very exploitative.
Well, if you're just doing it to make a widget, then I feel like that's where the write, publish, repeat model actually breaks down. Because now that we're in this era of you can write, publish, repeat, like at scale really fast, then what is your differentiator? What is your special sauce? How do you market? Like, write, publish, repeat, it does work, but it's still part of the thing. Like, you still need to bond with your readers. You still need to build intelligent funnels. You still need to tell your readers where to go, and you still need to deliver on the story, and you need to put yourself in the story. Otherwise, let's say I have a magic box now that I can press a button and it makes me
work. Is it a magical mystery box?
It's a magical mystery box. And I can make one book per day with this. Well, I can't read that book. I can't process that book. I can't bond with that book, even if I can produce that book. So I really don't know how I could sell that book or make it part of my catalog that I want to talk
about.
That's
a damn good point. You can't read a book that fast. So there's no quality control here going on when someone's doing that.
And I get it. Like, I'm not, if that's how you want to build your business, awesome. It's just not what I'm interested in. And Joanna had put the umbrella of, like, well, like someone like Michelangelo, right? They're an artist that he didn't paint the Sistine Chapel all himself. He had a lot of people to help him, but it's a Michelangelo, you know, production. And AI helps because you can have all of these, you know, agents, like, in 2025. So it's just a really interesting time. And Sterling and Stone is very much not AI, no AI. It's banned in the company. But Story Merchants is very experimental, and we're seeing what we can do with some new engines. And I think it's a really interesting time and space. But for me, I'm much, much, much more, exponentially more interested in doing things that I could not do before than going any faster. I already am going fast enough. I already have, like, I don't know, between 25 and 30 books that are completely finished and not published. So I don't need more content. Like, that's not it. I want to go deeper in the content that I'm creating, and some of these new tools allow us to do that. So I really appreciated the conversations around AI were a little more evolved than I had expected them to be. And that was really great. But mostly, it just, the event felt great because it's what I missed about having our own events and being around all of these people who are just smart, hardworking authors who are investing in themselves.
Smarter artists, you'd say.
Smarter artists. So I really loved being around that energy, and I definitely came back invigorated in fiction. Okay, yeah, my aura ring says that I'm beat to shit, and I am beat to shit, but I also, emotionally, I'm ready to, you know, start putting more into my fiction, because I have pulled back on that a little bit. Not in the writing, actually. It's the publishing I'm doing the writing and the repeating. It's the publishing that I've been missing for a couple of years because, you know, I have the writing habit. I'm always producing something, but it doesn't necessarily make sense to spend marketing time and dollars at Sterling and Stone for these standalones that I want to write. It's not where we need to put our energies, because as a collaborative company, we're always doing what's best for the studio. But I got energized on a few ways to monetize standalones and fiction and other stuff that we're doing and planning on doing.
So, okay, you're a guy that, you know, you pay attention to, like, everything in the publishing space, beyond the publishing space. You're probably one of the most knowledgeable people I know. when it comes to publishing and movies and TV, all the cool shit. So you have a lot of knowledge and you go to this place, and I'm thinking for you, like, you're probably one of the more knowledgeable people in the room. What do you get out of it? Do you always find something new when you go to places like this? Because I feel like a lot of it would be like, yeah, I already know that. Like, not you being a dick about it, but just
That's a great question, and it's fair. Yeah, so there's stuff that I want to get out of it. So, for example, I went to two different panels. One was on back catalog, and one was on intelligent funnel design. And both were great sessions for the right person and disappointing for me because, like, I just get it. I was hoping for something new, and there wasn't anything new for me on either one of them. But
weren't for you, though, really.
Those weren't for me, exactly. So, like, I'm hoping, because in a 45-minute talk like that, one thing that gives me a new idea that I didn't have before makes the 45 minutes worth it. I don't need to eat the whole animal. Where I feel like what I really want is energy. I really want to cross-pollinate ideas. But for me, the main reason...
Gotta bring flower references into it.
The main reason for me to go to Author Nation this year, and why I'm already eager to go next year, I already bought my ticket for next year, is people. Like, I really love being able to contribute. I really love being able to answer questions and give. And I do want to learn a little bit, but I also want to be there. And that was a really rewarding few days. I had a lot of people come up and thank us, you know, you too, Dave, you know, for the...
Me? Oh God, I'm glad I wasn't there. I can't stand people.
You know, we were definitely a part of something special back then. You know, our DNA is in this event. And so I really like being of service, and I really like getting ideas that I would not be getting otherwise, and being around creative people doing cool shit. I feel like being an author is a lonely thing often. And fortunately, I mean, not for me, I have a lot of company in both companies, so I'm not really lonely.
You built your own friend group.
Yes, I do. I tend to build my own friend groups. Hey, I got a fence to whitewash. Who wants to whitewash it with me?
And let's start a whitewashing business.
Yeah. But I really do just love being around creative people. I had a lot of great conversations, and that's fun. I feel like anytime you can get smarter faster is worth the investment in time or money. And for me, just being around other people who are doing the work, I really wanted to be reminded that, you know, fiction, it's a grind for sure, but it is a beautiful grind, because as you grow, people are getting exposed to your ideas and your work. And I really did feel, as both a nonfiction author and a fiction author, I am totally re-energized, and 2025 is, I'm going to put a lot of content out. So my word for the year this year was generation, and I've generated a lot. I've generated more content this year than any other year in my life. And I've always written a lot since I started 15, 16 years ago, but next year I'm going to get some of that out.
I'm thinking that you should probably get introduced to Patrick Rothfuss and George R. R. Martin. I bet you can help them immensely.
Yeah, I think that
get that shit done.
Yeah, I think that it's a little bit different, because for me, the joy is in the bouncing around. Like, if I were to spend years on one book, I feel like I would be bored. And honestly, I don't think that the quality of that book would be very good. I think I would overthink things. I think I would tinker it to death. I think that one of the things that gives my work its verve is that it moves, and that I'm putting all of myself into it, and then I'm moving on.
So what were some of the other, like, takeaways you had from Author Nation, other than the mystery box, something that you already knew about and loved? Were there things that people were doing that you hadn't thought of, or maybe you'd considered at one time and you're like, nah, and, you know, just put on the back burner?
No, there were no surprises, but there were things that were really reinforcing as to what we already believe, and the ways we're behaving. So, for example, direct sales are obviously a big thing, a growing trend. And when you have a world where you can publish a book a day. So, Dave, do you know that recently Amazon put limits on how many books you can publish to keep up with AI? How many books? What do you think the limit is?
Wait, they decreased or increased the limit?
No, there was no limit before, so now they have put a limit on.
Oh, to per day? How many you can do per day?
Yeah.
Well, I think a reasonable amount. But see, it's tricky because you might have somebody that just started, but they're like moving from somewhere else and they bring a catalog of 50 books or something. Like their back catalog, they just dump in one day. So I'm going to guess they got to count for those people. So 60 at the most.
No, three books per day.
Oh, okay.
But thanks. That's 90 books a month, right? And I'm sure there would be, if you're moving a catalog over, that might be special allowances. But just the idea that you could put three books a day, right? So if you're living in that world, the argument used to be, you know, we made the argument, write, publish, repeat. And then Michael Anderle made the argument, 20 books to 50K. Well, both of those arguments are dead, right? There are people with 150 books who aren't making ends meet. So what is the next step? And that's when it comes to, you know, direct sales, more intelligent funnel design, going deep with your catalog instead, you know, like translations, audios, like how else can I maximize my catalog? So these are all things that we know. These are things that we were talking about 10 years ago. You know, it's not new stuff, but it is really apparent that the old way of doing things is dead. So the market is both more mature and transitioning. Right? Like it's transitioning for a lot of reasons. It's transitioning because of the way AI behaves. It's transitioning because of the way social media has evolved. It's transitioning because of ads. It's transitioning because of AI. Like there's a lot of drivers, but I think that it's reinvigorating. So, you know, from the big wave of indie publishers who were around a decade ago, a lot of them have fallen off. And then there's a lot of new people. And some of the people who, you know, were doing it 10 years ago are either have totally moved on to something else or are very successful. And there's a new wave of people. And, you know, I think it's always good to pay attention to what the new people are doing because they're coming at it as beginners. And I think the beginner's mind is a very, very powerful mindset.
Well, yeah. I mean, when we started, we're doing, you know, very agile things and figuring it out as we went. And I think not being beholden to a set of rules that, you know, everybody has to follow a certain way definitely gave us freedom to experiment. Has Amazon, like, do they have limits yet on people using AI for books? I know they're out there because I see the fucking books all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not limits so much as you have to declare. So it asks you, did you use AI in this book? And it's yes or no. I'm positive that there are a lot of people who are checking no, you know, but are clearly using AI. And there's tells. I mean, there's a couple of dozen words that are just like, yeah, you would not have used that word 2 years ago.
So... okay, so these people that are dumping these AI books on there that they contributed absolutely nothing to on their own, they're eligible for the same, you know, KDP select money and shit?
Well, yeah, they're eligible, but how are they going to get it? Like an AI book, I mean, you may be able to get a couple of sales. You're not going to get repeat customers. You're not going to build a list. You're not going to build an audience base. So,
you know, I feel like AI for fiction... no way. Not in a way where AI is strictly writing the entire story and shit. I do think for nonfiction, you could probably shit those out and sell and repeat sell. Because summarize a fucking textbook or something and boom, you got like a 1 hour book. There's even, I won't say the name of the series, but there's something that has 1 hour in the title and I'm pretty sure that's AI. But think people have some value for that or find value in that.
Yes, absolutely. I've dabbled in both nonfiction and fiction, and nonfiction is 10 times easier to get good results because it is simple. It's also a memory issue. So the example that I always use is if on page 17, your character is wearing a yellow sweater, and then on page 234, that yellow sweater is somehow relevant. We as humans are amazing and we remember the yellow sweater. We, you know, especially if the author hung a lantern on it, we're going to remember that yellow sweater and why it's relevant. But Claude can't remember the yellow sweater on page 17. You have to specifically bring its attention to why that yellow sweater matters. And that's difficult to do several hundred pages later. But
it doesn't know you're foreshadowing. It just views all details as the same.
Yeah, AI only has the context we give it. It is just pattern recognition. So if we're not giving it the appropriate context, it has no idea. Nonfiction is it's smaller, it's bite-sized, it's able to, you know, extrapolate these ideas based on a core concept much, much easier. And you also don't need as much voice in nonfiction. And in fiction, when AI tries to give something voice, often it's like, it's grimace purple. Like, it's just, it tries way too hard and it overwrites. And so for me, with generative prose, AI tends to be slower for the end result than what I get just naturally, because I write fast, I edit fast.
You are an AI, I think.
I've had 15 years of it. But I think that for things like world building, AI is wonderful. For things like science, that I used to be able to write science books because I had Johnny. And now I'm not writing anything right now. And so if I'm writing a science thing, you know, like, AI is really good for helping me work that kind of stuff out. And so I just like it as a tool, but I don't ever want... I think the mistake is when creative people outsource their thinking to AI. That's never a good idea. You know, outsource the things that you can't do. It's just like having a research assistant. Or Joel, I always used to like... wake up early in the morning, and he woke up early too. So I'm up at 4:30. He's an hour ahead of me. It's 5:30. He's up.
I need to know this gun or car fact.
Yes, exactly. I would say, hey,
yeah, that's what I've asked him.
You know, and his Slack would ding and his wife would say, good morning, Sean. You know, like, this was the thing. But I even if I want to, you know, tag Joel and ask him a question, I do feel a little bit bad about it. I never, ever feel bad asking ChatGPT for, you know, to answer my question. And that's what makes it, for me, creation is often about movement and momentum and keeping the ideas spinning and going forward. And if I have to wait, I mean, dude, you're hard to collaborate with over the years, you know, increasingly so.
Yeah.
Because like, it's almost like negotiating for an eclipse or something. Like, when is your sleeping schedule going to line up with the calendar so we could take an hour to brainstorm?
If I could push a button and make it happen, I would.
I know, but that makes it hard. Like, I know that whenever I have a question for, you know, my AI collaborator, it's going to be able to answer it. So
I'm looking to create my own AI, just replicating my beautiful personality and just give it to you as a gift. Here you go. Dave.
I would love that, actually. And I believe that we could make a Dave. I believe that by 1 year from today, we will
have Skynet
AI Dave. Like, that's my goal. But yeah, I have found that working with AI, I know that there's a big worry that, well, there's going to be less jobs, there's going to be less need for creatives. And in my experience, I'm working with more people because of AI, not fewer. There's more projects, there's more opportunities because there's just more things going on. And so I feel like I understand the fear, absolutely. But I just...
I think one of the areas, because I come from a slightly different viewpoint in that I was an artist for a long time, comic artist, and I could definitely see that cutting into artists the money they can make, unless they're also utilizing AI or something, or that I think they'll have to be more reliant on their networking, their branding, and that's not always.
And even leaning into things like handcrafted and
But that's not always our strong suit. A lot of artists and writers are introverted by nature, don't know marketing very well. So
are embarrassed
too. Be difficult.
Like, it's hard to ask for money.
But I will say, I was very opposed to the idea of AI very early on. Curious how it worked. I always have a curiosity on everything. And I wasn't ever going to, you know, use it for storytelling. But then I was writing a short story, I think it was, or maybe it was an outline. I don't remember what the story was, but I do remember I was trying to figure out, well, I do remember the story now, but I won't say it because I don't know where it went. But I was trying to figure out how an AI could trick another AI and how a person would, you know, fix it or hack their way out of it or whatever. And I'm like studying all this tech shit, you know, Googling and shit. I'm like, I'm being stupid. Why don't I just ask an AI what they would do? And it gave me a very fucking detailed answer that was well above and beyond the things I researched. And I looked into what it said, and it gave me correct information so far as I could tell from the research I did. And I was impressed by this, like, as a brainstorming tool, not to come up with ideas, because I have more than enough ideas than I will probably ever be able to write, but to fine-tune or solve a problem that I'm struggling with, especially in an area I don't know. Holy shit, that was amazing.
Yeah, I don't AI for idea generation, because like on my strength finders, that's number one, is I'm never going to lack for ideas. But for refining ideas, it's great. You know, like, I'm fortunate to have enough people in my life who are really good at saying, like, slow down, Sean, or have you thought about this? Or, like, really checking me, right? And that's usually what I need. It's the core idea is strong more often than not, right? Like, I have a pretty good sense of what a good idea is and what a usable idea is and what an idea that can be shaped is. But for me, most of the joy is in the initial spark of that idea. Oh, wouldn't that be cool if? And I really need somebody to come in and critically think about it. Neve is excellent at that. The Sterling and Stone CEO is just like brilliant at coming in and saying no, and this is why, right? And so you're a naysayer by nature, you know, like
we've I think always... I've gotten way better on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But from our very first story meeting, you're a no first guy, right? So you've always challenged me. You've always said, hey, how, like, it forces me to leapfrog the idea forward instead of just landing wherever we are. I think you need that. And I think that one of the best ways to use AI is to make yourself better. So for example, I won't ask it to write a chapter, but I might finish a chapter and then say, hey, can you give me a list of ways to improve this chapter? Because that's tangible. It's specific. So, oh, yes, you used this part's a little too passive. And
so as a writing coach, there's some elements that could help in that area.
Absolutely. But I will say the danger in AI is if you don't know what to ask for. So what makes it easier for me to use is that I have a 15-year history of collaborating with artists and writers. And so I know what questions to ask and I know what to expect back. But it's hard if you don't really know the right questions to ask. You could very easily go in the wrong direction. But for me, I love the natural language back and forth, where I've tried to use AI adjacent tools in the past, like AutoCrit or Pro Writing Aid. You know, these are things that are using pattern recognition to sharpen your writing, but there's no why to it. They'll just highlight something and I don't agree with it. And so I end up wasting a lot of time taking some of their suggestions, not all of them, and not feeling as confident about my work. But because with AI, it's a conversation, it gives me its suggestions and I can ask clarifying questions and I can say, does this work? It's a conversation. And that's what I'm always driven to do, is how good can I make this work in the time that I have before going on to something else?
This makes me think of when I worked at the newspaper, one of the things I came to appreciate was the people that worked in government that had been there a long time that understood how things worked. And I know people, they have a very cynical view of all government. And while I share a lot of those views, I do feel that the people that are on the ground doing the work, the people, you know, at the city and the local levels, they're there and they know their shit. They know how to make things work. And it's called institutional knowledge. And when you have people around for a long time, they have that knowledge and it helps keep things flowing smoothly. And I think that is an area you excel at, but I think it's also an area where people that have been doing their art or writing or different things for a long time, they have an institutional knowledge that your average person will not have. And they can leverage that with AI in some way to either help other people, like sort of be a middleman, like an artist especially, like I want this and this, but I wouldn't know how to say it. So you go to an artist and they know exactly what the fuck, because that's their thing. They know it. They speak the language. And I feel like that is an area where people can find a way to move forward and get better. And like you were just saying, a lot of people don't know what they're even to ask. So I think that's an area where there are some people that are going to be able to step up, find a way to add value and offer value and still make money and have a job and utilize AI in a way that isn't just stealing from them.
Yeah, it's, if you ask yourself the question, so I think that most people, or maybe that's unfair, a lot of creatives that I've seen, spoken to personally or have observed by reading things online or watching, paying attention, right? Not just creatives, entrepreneurs, just people using AI in general. The question that they're approaching AI with is, how can I be faster instead of how can I be better? And if you really approach it as, how can I be better? We had these conversations many years ago when the whole rapid release trend, you know, came out, and we really felt like retreating from that, because even though, yes, we
can make the ending up,
we were indirectly responsible for some of that, you know, happening. But by the time, like, we just didn't want to play that game, and we started asking ourselves, instead of what is the most we can do, what is the best we can do? And I feel like I've lost my way if I'm ever approaching AI from a, how can I get this done faster? Now, having said that, I appreciate how much faster I can do something. So, for example, you and I over the last couple of months have built a lot of websites. I can do a dummy up in this app called Gamma, which is amazing because you can basically use natural language to describe what you want your website to look like, which, oh my God, that's magic for me because I'm a visual person. Mm-hmm. I'm a visual thinker, but I can't necessarily do the things that are in my head. And now I can have this magic robot who makes a very 1.0 thing, a wireframe that's in my head, and then I can send it to Dave. And then he goes over and he uses his design eye to make it a 2.0. And then I can send it to Danny, who puts it on AuthorStack for us, which is like the best author website platform around. And so that is so easy to get to market. When Dave and I were working together 15 years ago, doing the same exact thing, okay, here's the wireframe, here's the 2.0 version, here it is with copy. And like, the copy and the design really, in a well-done website that is optimized for conversion, the design and the copy really have to play well together. So we're talking about a month of iteration before we would get to something that was good enough to go out to market, which can now be done in a couple of days.
Yeah, and then you're waiting for somebody else to get back to you or answer a question or whatever. And I designed websites for myself and with you years ago, and this has definitely taken a lot of pain out of that process.
Yeah, I think we should have like a dedicated AI episode at some point in the future. And
I feel like we just did.
I feel like I didn't mean for this to go down that rabbit hole, but it really was a big theme of Author Nation without it being a theme. Like, there were a lot of conversations around it. There were a lot of talks around it, but it didn't have the saturation of fear that I expected the topic to have. And I found that a good sign for what's going forward. Because here's the thing. The genie is out of the bottle. There is no way that this is not an ubiquitous technology that is going to be in every tool that we use within the next few years. Getting to a space where we can feel comfortable enough with the reality to lean into our art instead of outside of it, I think is a good thing.
No matter who you are, if you're using technology, you're going to be impacted by AI, because AI is now standard in Windows operating system. It's standard in Apple's operating system. Unless you're going to go Linux, you're not going to be able to keep AI out of your life. It's going to be there in some form or fashion, for good and for bad. And like, I think we got to figure out the best way to utilize it. Absolutely. But anyway, yeah, we took up a lot of time talking about AI. I didn't mean to. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about on Author Nation that, you know, we didn't get to?
No, I'll just sum up by saying it was a really optimistic experience, and I didn't really know what to expect going into it. I felt excited to go and dip my toe back into the community because I've been quiet for a long time, and I'm really glad that we made the decision earlier in the year that I was going to go. And then I'm really glad that we hustled up and got Write, Publish, Repeat, you know, online and the podcast going before, because without Author Nation, this wouldn't have happened. We wouldn't have started this show when we did. We might have done it at some point next year. But I really love how it all unfolded, and I just love, I love the community vibe. I love, again, I didn't go until this year, so I don't have I don't have any insight into the reboot, from all the scuttlebutt that I heard, it was a really good move, and it feels like it feels like something new. And again, I'm already excited to go next year again.
Yeah, I agree with the community thing. Infamously, I hate traveling. I don't mind being at the events. I like them, actually, and I like being there. As long as I can decompress afterwards and get my alone time, I'm good to go. And I would love to just be able to go to an event and not have to worry about all the travel and all the bullshit that goes with it. But yeah, I definitely see value there.
Well, I'm going to drag you there next year. How's that sound?
Yeah, you know, throw me in a mystery. That could be a big mystery box. You just drag this giant-ass trunk onto the stage.
A mystery cargo container.
Okay, so here we go. You drag this out onto the stage. You leave it there. You sit on it even. And you're just talking and talking. And for, after a while, you forget about it until someone brings it up. And you're like, oh, yeah, mystery box. Yeah, yeah, okay, hold on. I'm going to open it up. But you forgot to put fucking air holes in it. So when you open it up, I'm fucking dead. So thank you.
You're welcome.
There, I
knew that punchline was coming.
Hello, Dave from the future here with something we forgot to add on to the end of the last podcast because it all got messed up. We want to thank you for listening and let you know that you can get all the goodies we're mentioning at storymerchants.com/WPR/repeaters. And thanks, and we'll see you next time.
Shadows of the Sunshine State, where Datted is his home, lives a man named David Wright, who pens the great unknown. Diet Coke runs through his veins, a decoy wallet keeps him rich. Paranoia fuels his pen, and creativity's his niche. Write, publish, repeat, it echoes through the air. A chorus for creators, a call to those who dare. With cookies as his compass and a pen that won't retreat, he journeys through the pages, write, publish, repeat. Dave hosts a show where writers go to share their secret arts, interviewing minds alike, dissecting all their parts. Aspiring authors gather here, a place to find their feet, fueled by inspiration, write, publish, repeat. Sometimes Sean comes on the show,
and OMG, he talks a lot.
On and on and on and on and on, he shares his every thought. But all those words he spews can on occasion hit the spot. Dude keeps the conversation lively, even when he ties it in a knot. Write, publish, repeat. It echoes through the air. A chorus for creators, a call to those who dare. With cookies as his compass and a pen that won't retreat, he journeys through the pages. Write, publish, repeat.